All right, so thank you, everyone. Sorry to get send the chorus anyone prepare us in about last minute. As you know, I'm in America, so in Gullis, you unfortunately takes a little longer to process things, and I'm also 7 hours behind, so I got a little time difference. But all right, the topic for tonight is heating challah during Kiddush. The question is as follows: we like to keep our challah on top of the pots on the hot plate when Shabbat starts, and bring them to the table at the last minute so they will be warm and most tasty. Do they have to be on the table during Kiddush? So I divided this topic into three main discussions. The first one I actually only added really last minute because I really don't think it's much of an issue for the most part, but it's worth just mentioning. And that's the question of just Bishul. Are we worried about like leaving the challahs on the hot plate? So first of all, in terms of the challahs on the hot plate on Erev Shabbos, assuming you leave them there, so then assuming they're even partially cooked, at least Machal Ben Jusai, which is almost definitely going to be true, you're not going to have any issue really because it's just going to stay there. It's not going to be an issue of Shehiyah according to most Ashkenazi Psak. Maybe potentially depending on how you paskin, there's like a whole discussion. Machlokas like Chazon Ish, Mishneh Berurah, like a little discussion about if it's not fully cooked. Yeah, but assuming you have Blach, assuming you have all these issues, it's not going to be a problem. The potential issue, potentially, this we'll discuss, is if you want to heat up your challah for Shabbos morning. But there's a typical rule that Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, especially for Davar, something which is, and likewise, there's something in Afiyah Achar Afiyah, there's no baking after baking. And when you put the challah on the blech, on the plata, you're not actually baking it. You're not actually cooking it. Sorry, you're not. There's no ish, potential issue of bishul achar afiyah. You're just heating it through the air, which would be almost the definition of baking. So it'd be ein afiyah achar afiyah. There's no real problem. The only two potential issues that there could be in theory of having the challahs on the plata on Shabbos would be the following that the Achronim bring up. The Rambam, when he paskins, what exactly the definition of bishul is, brings the following definition when it comes to non-food items. He mentions, if you melt, turn to some metal, or you heat them up, then his basic rule is that's considered bishul, and he explains what follows, klalo shel davar, bein shiripe guf kasheh ba'esh o sheiksha guf rach, harizeh chayav mishum mevashel. If you harden something which is soft in fire, or if you soften something which is hard, then that is going to be considered bishul. In other words, if there's a change in state, you went from a liquid or softer item to something hard, or from hard to something soft, that's considered bishul. And that's why if you melt iron or something, you're going to be chayav for bishul, according to the Rambam. So the question is that the post can deal with, does this definition of bishul apply as well to food? So, for instance, the classic question is: let's say I want to make toast on Shabbos, right? So I want to put my challah on the plata for the purpose of making toast. Is that a problem of bishul because I'm going from a soft food to a hard food? So there's a big machlokes achronim. I quoted the Rav Ovadia, who quotes the Baal Shor Lumeshiv, who thinks that there is a problem of making toast based on this problem of making something hard based on this Rambam, Rambam. But Ravadi disagrees. In his opinion, the Rambam is limited specifically to non-food items, but food items, the definition of bishul has nothing to do with making hard or soft. It's about preparing something into food. The Shmirat Shabbos Gehilchata does paskin, though, based on this concern of the Baal Shor Lumeshiv. In which case, potentially, you would be concerned in this case of putting bread and making it into toast. However, there is a number of important distinctions we can make between our case and the case of making toasts, which itself is a machlokas. But first of all, in our case, it's worth pointing out that the plata doesn't really get hot enough to make toast unless you really intend to make toast. If you're planning on just heating up your challah, I've never really seen it challah like get burnt to the point of toast or even get hard. It really just gets a little bit hotter and mushier, especially if that's your intention. You're not planning on getting it burnt. So I don't think there's a real problem in that sense. And actually, Shmuel gets to the Paskin afterwards that if you want to defrost your challah, then it's also mutter. You can defrost it. There's no problem of defrosting. And he explains in the Ha'ara 2:14, source number 5, ki enes rafia harfia. There's no problem of fiach harfia. Ki ari lechem lo mitkashel gabi mixta. Doesn't actually get hard, and therefore there's no problem of a fiach harfia. So in our case as well, I think if you're intentionally just trying to heat up the challah and not actually make toast, it usually doesn't happen. And even in theory, if it did happen, then it's something which would be, you're in a mechab and you're not trying to do it. And, without getting into too much of the discussion here, it's pretty clear that potentially even the sholu meshiv would be moda in that case, that you're not intentionally trying to do something, especially in this context, then it wouldn't really be defined as part of the Isser Bishul. Part of the Isser Bishul Melacha Machshava in general, but specifically in this context, requires that you intend exactly what you're doing, and you're not actually intending for it to get hard. Even if it gets hard, it probably only gets hard a little bit on the bottom. It's not really getting hard. It's not like the full bread is, you know, getting burnt. If it gets burnt, it's obviously not really the same problem. So I don't really think this is a big issue. The other potential discussion people talk about is potentially there may be an issue of some posts can believe that there's a problem if something isn't bishul, then they describe it to an isser of makib patish. So I quoted the Be'er Halacha quotes from the Prima Gadim in source 6 that anything which isn't really bishul can be a problem of makib patish. So you could argue maybe heating up the challah can be a problem of makib patish, but we're really not concerned with that. That's really not something that we tend to paskin, and we're usually not choshesh for makib patish. And he brings a bunch of chronim who disagree with Prima Gadim, and therefore I think. Yeah, that's usually the question for toast, usually is the question of makib patish potentially. But here especially, it really wouldn't apply. And I think in general, assuming you're following the general rules of Shahiyah and Hachazara without, you know, doing anything wrong with in that discussion, then I don't think there'd be really any issue in terms of Bishul. So I kind of just wanted to move. I brought that up just because I thought that was something worth bringing up, but I don't think it's really our main topic. And therefore I kind of sped through it a bit. I didn't really mention Hatmana. I mean, it's a whole big machloket. Gets you, if you're a Sephardi, more of an issue. If you're Ashkenazi, Hatmana tends to not be an issue because you're not recovering the full thing. But I guess there is more to talk about for Hatmana. Yeah, I guess there will be potential issues with Hatmana, but yeah, it's a separate discussion. Okay, got it. Okay. Instead, I want to focus on two other things and really what leads one to the other. First is the actual din. Of do you need to have the challah on the table when you make kiddush? Right? Is that something necessary to kiddush and to suda on Shabbos? So I want to address this question in a slightly weirder way than maybe you would have otherwise, which is start from the Gemara and then go to the Rishonim. And instead, I want to actually talk about the minhag. Because I think, and this is going to be our part of my third topic, which we're talking about minhagim in general, because I really think that this is the way that halacha actually proceeded here, was created in this context, was that a certain minhag existed, and that Rishonim and Poskim dealt with the existing minhag and tried to resolve and explain the minhag through other existing, you know, Gemaras. And so I want to really analyze it through that lens. So the Rishonim present the following, it starts with the Gaonim ready, Inyan Ach, Orzura quotes, B'Shem or Shira Gaon, V'Dishayotun Ha'dinog Almal Mifras Ma'pal Gabi Ashokhan V'Kiddush V'Havdala. Why do we have this minhag to put a tablecloth or some type of covering on the table during Kiddush and Avdalah. And so there are three main approaches presented in the Rishonim. The first, that the Rav Shira Gaon quotes, is Taima Mai, Hachi, the Chol Hamukdam Bepasuk, Eretz Chita Usora, Hu Mukdam Lebracha, Hu Mushim Hachi, Mivarchinan, Bechol Hamotzi, Beresha, Arista, Vahad Mivarch Baropia, Gefen, Achamra. Because there's a general rule in Hilchos Brachot about what takes precedence. And usually the rule is based on, Eretz Chita Usora, based on what's closer to the word Eretz. So Chita comes first, so we make the bracha on Hamotzi first, and only afterwards make a bracha on HaGefen. However, Aval Leile Shabbat of Yamim Tovim, B'motzi Shabbat, B'motzi Yamim Tovim, the Mechayiv B'Kiddush B'Avdala, since you're Chayiv and Kiddush and Avdala, and they have to make a separate bracha on them first. So what do we do? How do we get out of this bracha conflict? So Meshmit Armi Lehu Kasa Dechamra, Paris Mapa Live Rifta, what you do is you cover the bread, Umekadesh alei dechamer, and then you make kiddush. Ki eched lipsuk ben kiddush lamotzi, and that way you make some type of hefsek, some type of difference between kiddush and amotzi, and that way you solve this bracha problem of the precedence. You may have heard this same svara slightly differently put, and it may be slightly different svara, maybe same type of svara, that the bread is in some ways embarrassed. Shlo levayi shapat, somehow the bread gets embarrassed by the fact that the wine goes first. So what you do is you cover the bread, and that way the bread isn't there, or the bread doesn't see what that it's being embarrassed, and that way it's fine. That's the way that the Rush and some of the Rishonim quoted also. If you want to look at the, I think source 11, I might have mentioned it. You quote the Rush Rishonim Damak Porsi Mapuk Neshlo Yirai Pat Boshato, that the bread doesn't get embarrassed. Same type of svara, or maybe slightly different, but the same general idea. Problem is a question of hilchos brachos, and the bread should come first, and therefore we cover it or we remove it sort of symbolically from the table. Reason number two, that the Rishonim explained for why we have this minog, Tosva quotes, V'yesh mifarish zecher l'man, shelo haya yored v'shabato v'yamim tovim, v'haya tal milamal ulamata v'aman bentayim. The second reason that it suggests is it's a zecher to the man, because the way that the Gemara explained in Yuma, the man would there would be a layer of tal beneath, and then there'd be the man, and then there'd be a layer of tal of dew on top. And so there was effectively a man sandwich where the tal, where the dew was both on top and beneath the man. And so zecher to that kium of the man, which the challah often is like a kium zecher to the man in general. So we do the same thing with our challah. We have something beneath the challah. We have something on top of the challah. And that way we fill this kium of being remembering the man. That's reason number two for the minhag. Reason number three, and for this we do need to learn the Gemara. So the Gemara in Sachem says as follows. We'll skip to the second part since I don't want to get bogged down too many of the details. Rabbi Bar Rav Huna ikla lebei Reish Galuta. Rabbi Bar Rav Huna went and visited the house of Reish Galuta. Ayetu taka kamei. They brought the table in front of him. Paras mapa v'kidesh. So he covered the table, or covered the bread, maybe, unclear a little bit. He covered something with a tablecloth, and he made kiddush. Tanya mihachi, there's a braita which supports this practice. She'ein nevin et ha'shulchan, ela im kin kiddush, v'im hebi poris ma'upo mekadesh. That you shouldn't bring the table until you first made kiddush, but if you did bring the table, so then you're poris ma'upo mekadesh. Then you cover the table, so to speak, or cover the bread, and then make kiddush. All right, so we see from this braita that's used as support in this story that seemingly there's some type of inyan of first making kiddush before the table arrives. And if the table happens to already be there, then you're supposed to cover the table so the table's not there. There's a lot of discussion within Rishonim how to read this Gemara, so I don't want to get bogged down too much in exactly what the Gemara is doing, because it might have to do with the previous Gemara. It has a totally different topic. But for our sake, this is at least this part of the braita seems to be normative for our topic. And the Shiltot gives the So the Rush explains based on his reasoning, right, the reasoning of the embarrassment. How does the embarrassment fit within this Gemara? Why do we have to first cover the table, cover the challah with mikdash? So he quotes Rabbi Nachman of Paris that the braita itself fits the same idea. Da'achi mighty raya dehechi de'ahani preset mapa. The point, therefore, of this braita is to show you this general idea that if you cover the bread, cover the table, it's as if the bread's not there. The table's not there. And that way, according to the reasoning of the bread being embarrassed, it's not going to be embarrassed because the bread is not there. It's not there to be embarrassed. All right. That's going back to the first reason we had. But there is another reason that the Shiltos brings based on this Gemara. Says as follows. Ukruve taka in source 12. Kruve taka mikami de mikadesh lo mikravina biyomer shabata my time. Why is it that we don't bring the table until after you already made kiddush? Ki hechi dititi sudata liyakra de shabata. That way, when you bring the meal, or the meal will come as a kavod for Shabbos, as a way of being mechaved to miyaker the Shabbos. However, hechi de krivu lo misolkinan ela porsh lamakwe. If you already did bring the table, then we can't remove it. Quotes this braita from this Gemara. So we see then that there are three. That's the Shiltos. That in theory you shouldn't bring the table at all, based on this din of Kavod Shabbos, meaning in some ways the basic idea, if you have not totally clear with that, we've covered Chavez, and this is some of the discussion we will be discussing. But the basic explanation of the Shilto seems to be that by making Kiddush first, what you're doing is you're establishing the purpose of this meal that's coming afterwards. And then if you already had the meal, then maybe like the meal is for Stam, because like during the week also I have dinner at night. But now that I first made Kiddush and only afterwards do I bring the meal, it's evident that the reason I'm having the meal is part of my Seudas Shabbos. And so according to the Shiltos, the reason I should bring the table only afterwards is to really miyaker the Shabbos that this meal is dedicated for the purpose as defined by Kiddush. Tosfot, though, makes the following point. This is where our topic becomes more relevant to our nowadays, because he mentioned the following. There seems to be a stira between this Gemara, that seems to talk about bringing the table only after you already made Kiddush, with a different Gemara. Because the Gemara says in Bechol Kitveh, V'hadamar Bechol Kitveh in Sechat Shabbos, Matza Shulchan Aruch Malach Tov Omer, if you find that there's supposed to be some type of kiyum or some type of halacha, that you're supposed to have a set table for Shabbos. And the question is, if you're only bringing the table, right, you're only setting the table after you make Kiddush, isn't that a problem? You're not setting Shabbos correctly. You're not fulfilling this kiyum of Hachana l'Shabbat. So how are you fulfill both Hachana l'Shabbat while also bringing the table only afterwards? The Tosfot's resolution is lo kasha. The aruch hu b'makom acher, ach ein bevinoto l'makom suda acher kiddush. No, his explanation is that you're able to do both. You can both have your mitzvah of Hachana l'Shabbat, of Kavod Shabbos, by preparing for Shabbos, by setting your table, and also have this din of making Kiddush before the table arrives, by putting the table in some other place, right? You have the table located in the corner of the room. It's set up, ready to go, kind of like, imagine like a wedding hall, where you have the tables maybe ready in the corner somewhere. It's already prepared to go. And after the chuppah, they move the rooms and they bring the tables in. And that way you're able to do both. However, Tosfos adds, V'achshav shulchan shalanu shem gedolim yoter. Nowadays, though, our tables, they're not small like they used to be. They're not like, you know, the wedding tables maybe where the whole industry to move the tables. Instead, now it's difficult to move the tables back and forth. So because it's difficult to bring, the tables between Kiddush and the meal. So anu regilim lifros map of the Kaddish. So what we do, therefore, is our minhag is different. Our minhag is to have the table set with the challahs already on the table from before Shabbos, but we cover the challahs, and that way, if the challahs aren't there, if the table is not there, but yet it is already there and it is already set. So you're able to fill both, even though we have large tables. That's Tosfot's resolution and explanation of the current minhag to have, to cover the challahs on Shabbos. And he explains this fits within the explanation of the Shiltos. The reason you do all this is because of Yakrit Shabbat. Just to be a little clearer, because it's just worth mentioning briefly, why is it that we move the tables? Like, what exactly is the problem of moving the tables nowadays? So Tosfot is a little bit it's not totally clear, but it's a little clearer in the Rush and the Mordechai, where there they seem to harker on the fact that there's two potential problems. There's one problem of Torah, some type of Tircha in general on Shabbos and Yantiv. We tend to try avoiding Tircha as much as possible. So there's some type of Tircha. It's tiresome. It's hard to move the table back and forth. And the second problem also leads me to mention is the problem of hefsek, some type of real distinction, some type of real break between the tape, between the Kiddush and the meal, and that would kind of defeat the whole purpose of what Kiddush is supposed to be, Bakam Suda. So to not have such a long hefsek, to not have the tircha, we have, because nowadays our tables are large, we already set up the table ready, and we just cover the table with a tablecloth. Yeah, it's just a little clearer. He said shalom lehafsik. It's not totally clear, like, all the reasonings. I just brought the Rush because he says Torah and hafsik. Just, it's a little clearer. That's all the purpose. But Tosfot doesn't disagree. I think it's just about, a little more clarity. Alright, so to summarize then, we have three main explanations. And this is summarized, if you want to look at the tour, summarizes it, and plenty of, other Achronim and Rishonim. Three main explanations for why we have this minhag of covering the challahs on Shabbos. The first is because of the bracha problem, that we don't want to have this, that the really bracha of bread, of hamotzi, should come first. The second is because of we want to be zecher l'man, because the man was covered both on top and on bottom. So to our halas are covered both on top and on bottom. And the third reason is because of this yakar, the Shabbat of Kavod Shabbos. Some, just to make it a little clearer, I'll just mention two quick nafkaminot between these explanations to get a little sense of better. Relates to two issues nowadays. One is whether or not there's a chiyuv to cover the challahs nowadays when you make kiddush during the day, kedusha rabbah. So according to the reason of yakar Shabbat, being yakar Shabbos, so presumably since it's all about setting up the table in advance of Shabbos, that only applies at night, because at night you're introducing the Shabbos. In the day, you're not really introducing the Shabbos, and therefore it wouldn't really apply, and that's what the Mordechai suggests. If you don't believe that the reason for why you cover the challahs is because either because there's zecher l'man, so then of course nowadays also even the day meal should be in theory be zecher l'man. That's what the Evan Ayarchi suggests, although the Avud Raham challenges him in source 17, thinks it doesn't make sense. And in the according to the third reason, or I think I worded the first reason, if it's based on the brachos, the question of the order of the brachos, so then that order of the brachos is going to be a problem in the day as well, because there too you have kiddush and then eat challah. So there too you have to cover the challahs based on that reasoning. All right, so that's just like one simple nafkamina to explain the difference between the reasonings and how they apply. A second potential nafkamina comes up is how long does the challahs have to be covered for? Right? Are we covering the challahs until we finally make hamotzi? Do we take off the challahs right away after we finish kiddush? Or the Magen Avraham suggests maybe even you can take off the challahs after you make hagefen. Right? So in the middle of kiddush, after you make the bracha of bori pri hagefen, now you can remove in theory the covering. So the Magen Avraham suggests that if you think the reason is because of the bracha issue, right, that the bread will be embarrassed. So it's sufficient that you just made hagefen, because now the bread won't be embarrassed because you already made hagefen. And even during middle of kiddush, you can remove the covering. If it's based on yakar to Shabbat, he thinks that you can't remove it till after kiddush ends. And then the preacher suggests, in his view, that if you believe the reason is based on the man, so then in theory you want to keep the man explanation to be zecher l'man as long as possible. And then you'd want to keep the challahs covered until the very last moment, until the very moment you're actually making the bracha of hamotzi. That's what the preacher suggests. So that would be a mafkamina then between these three reasons for how long you keep the challahs up. Now, challahs covered. Now, it's worth mentioning that this is all based on Lan Machlokasim. It's not clear that the Prima Gadim disagrees on both of these points, but based on different reasonings, he disagrees. Not really our topic, but it's just a good way of really concretizing and crystallizing the different approaches. Okay, there's another afkmin I mentioned that I won't get into, but it's about what if you make kiddush on bread alone on and you don't have wine. Then it's another afkmin as well, related to the same type of topic. All right, so how does this relate to nowadays? What do we do bizman hazeh? So the Sefer HaMitzvah Smag, quote, really, one of the Balei Tosfot, when we really learn in the school of Tosfot, really takes Tosfot as the minhag. And for instance, he quotes this minhag of having the mappa of just covering the challahs on the table. That is what we're supposed to do. And indeed, the Aruch HaShulchan, in more modern times, he brings up this suggestion, maybe, in theory, what you should do is you should have the challahs only brought to the table afterwards. Right? So based on the three reasons we gave earlier, right, if we go through them, in some ways it makes a lot of sense. According to the reason about the brachas, that the precedence of brachot, that the challah is going to be embarrassed, so of course you can bring the bracha, the challah afterwards. If anything, like it's right better, because then it's not just covered, it's not even in the room. If you're talking about the reason of the man, so there it's a little bit more tricky. Maybe there's some, you know, having the challah already covered during kiddush, but in theory you could say, and this is quoted in some people seem to quote this in Mishnah Berurah, there's like some ways of arguing that it only matters that the challahs are covered for some short period of time. They don't have to be covered for a long time. So all you have to do is you bring the challahs last minute after you finish washing, or right before, after kiddush, before you finish washing, before you start washing, you bring back the challahs, and it's covered then for the next, you know, several minutes, and that's good enough to be zecher l'man. So according to that reasoning as well, in theory, you'd be fine to heat up the challahs, you know, as long as you'd like on the plata, and only bring them later, right after kiddush, to the table. According to the third reason about Kavod Shabbos, so according to everything we've seen so far, definitely within the Shiltos, it seems like Mi'ikar Hadin, if you follow the Breita, you follow what the Gemara says, so in theory, it would be the best minhag would be to bring the challah only later, Because then you really fulfill what the Brita says, which says only bring the table after having already finished Kiddush. And that indeed is what the Gra in Source 27 says is the Minog. Bishat the Kiddush alayayin lo yeyalechem ala shulchan. The Gra argues that you really shouldn't have the bread on the table during Kiddush, because according to all three reasons, it'd be better to not have the table, the challah on the table during Kiddush. And actually, according to Source number 24, the Rosh Hashanah quotes from Pnei HaRav, from the Rav, that he, there's some story where he finally came one time to YU, I guess, for Shabbos, and he saw that the challahs were already on the table, and he yelled at all the Talmidim that they shouldn't be on the table. Because he obviously paskid like the Gra, and he was, you know, a brisker, and he thinks that that was the wrong practice to do. As opposed to the Aruch HaShulchan. Because the Aruch HaShulchan disagrees. And in his view, actually, you really have to have the challahs on the table. He quotes the potential position. It says, "V'ein nachon lasav kein." You really should not have the challahs afterward. You should have the challahs right now during Kiddush. And there are three, at least three different like ways the Achron explain this. I cited them in here if you want to like just read them quickly. Three different ways to really explain it. And I think it might be worthwhile just mentioning them briefly what they are. For some, and this is partially based what I agree would be based on the Aguda's explanation, is that it seems that if you look at the actual minhag, and we'll really talk about this more in a minute when we talk about minhagim in general, but based on the actual minhag we practice nowadays, bizman hazeh, we really are not following like any much of the shita of Yakud Shabbata. Nobody brings the table afterwards. So it seems that you can make an argument that whole reasoning, the Shilto's whole explanation for why we do this Brita, why we follow this custom, just doesn't apply anymore. And the only two reasons that do apply for why we cover the challahs are based on the other two issues, the issues of the man and the issues of the brachos. In which case, if you're not... because Tosfot is still... according to Tosfot... Well, I'll get there in a second, but even according to Tosfot, it still seems like maybe you'd argue, and this is what the Grud argue, maybe l'chatchila you should still have the bring the challahs only afterwards. That's what the Grud definitely argues if you look at his comments on the Shulchan Aruch. No, for sure not, which would bring me to the next two explanations. The second explanation, and this is if you look at the Aruch HaShulchan, it seems what his argument is that he understands that the meaning of Yakar Shabbata actually means that the challahs are on the table bizman Kiddush, and that there's actually a kiyum in Kavod Shabbos dafka when you have the seuda with Kiddush, and that having the combination of the two things is actually what creates this Kavod Shabbos. Because if you had the challahs brought only later, that wouldn't actually be a connection between the Kiddush and the seuda, and you wouldn't actually have the same Yakar Shabbata. That seems to be what he's saying in his explanation if you look back at Source 22. The third explanation, this is probably the most popular explanation that most of the Achronim tend to quote, is that, and it's like what Tosfot seems to be suggesting, if you look back to Tosfot, is that midin hachana, the way they understand it, is that part of hachana for Shabbos, part of preparing the table for Shabbos, includes preparing the table as it would be set, you know, for a meal. And so if you ever go to like a nice restaurant, part of having like a meal at a nice restaurant is having the bread already on the table, you know, set out for you. That's part of the meal. So not having, and according to the Mincha Titzchak and according to those like him, the reason you need to have the challah on the table is because bringing the challah only later, afterwards, means you're not actually doing hachana l'Shabbat. You're not actually preparing the table properly for Shabbos, and that's a problem. Bizman HaGmara, when they used to bring the table afterwards, the table was set. It was just in the corner. And there the table was fully set with the challahs and with the tablecloth. It was full. It was ready to go. But nowadays, when the table is going to be set, you know, in the dining hall, and you're not going to move the table, then it's important as part of preparing the Shabbos to have the table there with you, to have the challah there, on the table as part of hachana, the Shabbat. That's the argument that Minchat Yitzchak makes, and that might be probably what Tosfot seems to be arguing for why you should have, why he suggests you don't, that you should have the challah already on the table, and cover it, and instead of bringing it later, based on this, as the Gra would have it. All right. So, Sachakol, what comes out of this whole discussion is, according to the first two explanations, in theory, there's no potential real problem for bringing the challah later after Kiddush. According to the third explanation of Yakar Shabbata, it seems to me there's a machloket in Minhag. The Aruch HaShulchan, someone who cares deeply about Minhag in general and being mastik the Minhag and following current tradition, follows the current tradition in Klal Yisrael, especially at his time, which was to have the challah already on the table, and he thinks anything else is wrong. And the Gra, someone who cares much more about, consistently cares much more about, like, following Ikar Psak of the Gemara, is concerned with the issue of not following the Breita, and the Breita seems to make mention more clearly, you should bring the bread later. Does he hear? Yeah, he brings it, but then he says, V'ein nachon lasot. Maybe I'm overstating the minhag thing. I think in general, Aruch HaShulchan tends to be very concerned about minhag. Yeah, I think it's more common, and it's also more common within halachic precedents to follow this approach, for sure. But I don't want to overstate the Aruch HaShulchan. I accept the correction. Okay, so that's all with regard to this discussion. And as I said, it really comes down in some ways to almost like a machlokes and minhag. Which is why what I really want to do for the next, 8-10 minutes, whatever we have left, is really talk about minhag. All right, great. I did notice some of the other chevra lasted a little longer than, ended a little later than 45, so I'm gonna go a little fast, if that's okay. Because what I want to discuss is really, Well, and as I said, in Chutz Laretz, we're still a little slow, so it takes a little longer to explain things, to cop things, you know. Averei Yisrael Machkim, you know. Averei Chutz Laretz, it's not. What I want to really use this discussion as a springboard to really talk about minhagim. And obviously, minhag is, it's kind of almost a minefield. I spent a long time just like reading through. There's like, just like a million different things about minhagim. It's like a lot of literature, and it's very difficult to get real grounding in minhagim because there's so much about it. But I think it's worth having a discussion here because part of what we're discussing, really comes down, right? This particular shaila is being asked is a question about more modern families. Let's say more modern Orthodox communities. I've certainly been to a lot of homes like this, but it's certainly, more of like a new thing people do, is to heat the challahs in their homes. Heat their challahs, on the plata before Kiddush and during Kiddush, and bring the challahs afterwards. And that certainly does not appear to be at all the minhag beforehand. Maybe in Lithuania it was the minhag for the Gra and his Talmidim, but certainly for most people it does not seem to be the minhag. And I think there's a really interesting discussion to have here. Can I switch minhagim? Right? Let's say my minhag, my family, I know my Alter Zaidi definitely had the challahs, on the table. Can I switch minhagim then if that's something nicer? And especially for in this particular context, maybe it's like better Oneg Shabbos, because that way the food is hotter and I enjoy the meal better. Right? Is there room to change minhagim in this context? So I want to discuss minhagim and change minhagim, to some degree. Okay, so I quote in the Maariv Chayes, suggest this, and this might be a somewhat useful thing just to orient ourselves, is there are different types of minhagim to think about. First, there is minhagim which relate to Isser Veheter, right? A lot of minhagim are type of harchakot, right? In theory, the halacha follows X, whatever it is, basar v'chalav issues. In theory, basar v'chalav, you don't need to have two different sinks, two different dishes for everything. In theory, for a lot of different things, you can be lamar mekel based on halacha. But the minhag is that we're a lot more machmir because we're very concerned and we're purish min ha'isser to whatever extent. And that becomes a certain type of minhag. And the rules of changing those minhagim are very different and tend to be pretty machmir. It can be very difficult to change. We tend to be pretty stringent on changing those type of minhagim. However, here we're not talking about a minhag about isser. There's no isser involved from whether you bring the challah before or afterwards. That's not an isser. It's a problem of different fulfillments of the mitzvah of Kavod Shabbos or Oneg Shabbos. And so instead he presents there's three different categories. One category he talks about is Ofen Arishon, Nehemin Yanim, Shel Mabekach, Ve'em Nogim Lo Yisur Torah with Rabbanan. Issues that really have no connection to any mitzvah deraisa or derbanan, there just happen to be minhagim in Klal Yisrael. And actually, in some ways, you could go so far as to say that they're kind of just like they're kind of the borderline between, like, are they really Minhog even? Like, are they not even just, like, not Minhog? He gives an example of Kumahakaut, Haman, Mishat Kriyat Megillah, like, yelling out Haman, yelling during Haman. He talks about Minhag Machale Chalab Chag Shavuos, eating dairy on Chag Shavuos. He has, like, a few other examples, things which, like, they're not really clear that even Minhagim. But he's very machmir. He thinks he really can't change them. He quotes the Ramah, Vizel Shono, En Roy Lilog, O Levatel Shumanog, Kilo Lachinam Nifku, Ube Emet Karinu, Kigam Chazal, Hiziroton, Al Kiyose Bazet. Chazal were very machmir on Minhagim. Minhagim have a very strong importance in our tradition, in our identity of who we are, and we really cannot be changing Minhag that easily. We really can't be make fun of them in any way, and we really should be very strict in keeping these Minhagim. Ofen Hasheni, he presents is a problem of Minhagim that are chashash letzad sakana, maybe we're worried of sakana. Think of, for example, a bunch of different halachot that the Mishnayos and Trumos has about, like, whether, like, leaving open source of water that a snake might come and eat it, like things that I have to do, sakana, like those type of minhagim or halachos. Think of those. Open Ashlishi, the third type of minhag, hema hamanhigim hanogim beit tekneset b'shat tefillah. It relates to minhagim that relate to davening, right, to nusach hatefillah. And there, in that discussion, I think in some ways we can find the best parallel to our issue here, because it's something which is halachic. We're not talking about stam, like this minhag that doesn't really connect to halacha in any strict, real way. We're talking about something that really connects to what the definition of kavod Shabbos and oneg Shabbos is. There certainly is much more halachic precedence to it, but at the same time, it's really very much defined by the communal practices of our day. And the real difference between Beit Knesset and Nusach HaTefillah might be that those are also public. So we can discuss about the public nature versus the private individual homes, which might be a very big difference in terms of how you understand Minhagim. But for our purposes, I think that might be the best model for how to go forward in thinking about these Minhagim. And there really are very opposite approaches to approaching these type of Minhagim. The Amar Shaddam has a tshuva about changing your Nusach, let's say from Ashkenazi to Sephardi, or maybe the reverse. I don't remember exactly what his order is. What exactly was he asked? And he answers, Tshuva nira de avagav sheish kinyan mishra davar hagun v'nira tov l'echot adam v'minhag avotav v'karvu shenichnas lebaz harat u'bal titosh charti mecha. There are some things which are super important to keep the minhag. So much so that there is maybe an isser even of bal titosh charti mecha moving away from the Torah of your mother. It's better in this case to leave the minhag. The only case where you have a concept of minhag and there's an isser of changing your minhag is something which has an isser. And that's what the Gemara in the third parak of Psachim of Makom Shenagu refers to. All of those about harchakat isur. But the case of changing the nusach hatfilah, and arguably in our case, as well, when it comes to kavod and oneg Shabbos, these are issues which are not about isur, and therefore there is no problem to change the minhag. And he even goes on at one point, you don't even need a neder, you don't even need to be mevatel neder here, you can just change as you want, without any concern about changing it. On the other hand, the Ma'arik, he's much more machner about minhagim, and he says in source 28, "De anu ein lanu b'chol yotzei bazeh ela minhag hamakom ve'afilu hayav minhag acher hagun mimenu ein lishanot miminhag hamedina." Even if there is another minhag that exists, right, that we have in our case, right, the minhag of the Gra versus the minhag of the Stam, the world that the Aruch HaShulchan quotes, he says, nonetheless, even if you think the Gra makes more sense, nonetheless, ein lishanot minhag hamedina, you really should not change from minhag hamedina in all cases, because the role of minhag is super important. And I bring up in this context a really important essay that Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik has, which I really recommend reading because I think it's a really fascinating hashkafic and sociological discussion about our time. And I only bring a small part of it. It's almost like 60 pages or something. But in his view, he explains that there really are two different types of tradition. There's what he calls mimetic tradition, which you call like Minhag effectively, like the way Minhag in terms of like the larger sense of Minhag, not just in terms of like practice which aren't pure halacha, but the way we practice our daily lives, the way we practice halacha lemaisa at the end of the day. Something which he thinks that the Aruch HaShulchan, and you could quote the Tosfos also, are very much concerned about. They're very much concerned to justify and to explain the way that Am Yisrael practices Judaism today. In contrast with the Mishnah Brewer's approach, where the Mishnah Brewer is much more of a legal scholar. What he cares about are, what is the literature, what does halacha say in the Sfarim? I look up the Rishonim, I look at the other Achronim, and I care about the precedents of those Rishonim and Achronim, but I care very much about what is written in the Sfarim, what the poskim paskind, and what happened b'metzius, what the Am Yisrael did is less important to me in terms of dictating what halacha is. And this is, in Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, this is a real change that has happened b'zman hazeh, where we've gone a lot more towards paskind Mishnah Brura. We care much more about the legal text and less so about our mimetic tradition based on the minhag. But I don't bring it up to make the sociological point of the change. I just bring it up. I bring him up because it's a really good example of these two schools of thought. And the more you believe that you really have to justify Minhagim, and Minhagim are important, the more you're going to believe, like the Maharik, the more he quotes the Gaonim, that we care a lot about Minhagim, and even Minhagim that aren't based in Isurim, that Minhagim that aren't based in, that don't have any Torah, real Mekoros that they are defending in some way, the more you're going to think that those Minhagim have to be defended, they have to be upheld, like the Maharik. The more though, you think, like the Mishnah Brura, that what you care about is the literature, you care about what the scholarly work, what the poskim have written about, the more you're going to say, no, in things which are actually surim, the nay there minhag is going to matter, but in things that aren't isurim, like whether or not you should clap for Haman, those type of things, like maybe we're not going to be so machmir on, and those things like maybe we really shouldn't follow since there really is no halachic precedent. And I brought up earlier, the Aruch HaShulchan is a good example of someone who cares about minhag, and the Gra also is someone who cares a lot about not just the halachic practice, halacha itself, and the literature, but also specifically like literature specifically of like the Gemaras and Rishonim. And a lot of the debate then seems to rely on this particular discussion about how you view Minhagim's role in general. So to root this idea a little bit better, like a little bit clearer, I think it's useful to think about what exactly is the normative force of Minhagim. Why are Minhagim valid? And if we had another half hour, I would like go to prove how Minhagim really have so much normative force, it really matters so much. Minhag, according to Shami, Minhag Mevatel Halacha, it does a lot. So why do we care so much about Minhagim? Why do Minhagim have so much normative force? Why do they have so much power? So there are three general theories. I quoted just a few sources that seem to mention them. Theory one is that we care about Minhagim because what Minhagim are is what the Gedolim are of the previous generation paskind. If we see that the Minhag is that we bring Chalas to the table and the Chalas are there in for during Kiddush, that shows that not only did the people in the 13th century Germany practice that way, but it shows that the Balei Tosfot agreed with that practice, and it shows that the Shulchan Aruch and that the and all the Nosi Kalim and all the poskim of our generations, they all poskim that way. The Minhag proves what actually we care about is what the previous Gedolim poskimed. That's kind of one way of thinking about it. And if you think in those type of terms, then you're going to be thinking all in terms of legal precedent. You're going to be thinking about, well, can we disagree with the Balei Tosfot? And maybe the girl will say, yes, maybe we should disagree with the Balei Tosfot, follow Stam Dina Gemara, Stam of the Breita. Or we'll start talking about like questions about legal precedents and how do we view other Rishonim and how can we disagree with Rishonim. It's going to be very much a legal discussion of how do we paskin and whose shitas we follow. If though you other the other positions for what Minhag are, so there are two others. One, as Mari quotes, is that based on the statement, Hanach Lem Yisrael Im Enam Nevim Bnei Nevim Him. That we follow what Yisrael, what Minhag is, because in some ways we believe that Yisrael are Nevim B'nei Nevim Him, that they are themselves, they are manifestations of the divine will. That what we do, what Klal Yisrael does, is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to do. And even if there is no actual source for it in halacha, we are the halacha. Am Yisrael is the divining force of what halacha should be, and it is. And if you, there are some really powerful tshuvos the Chatam Sofer has, as among others, that really prove how much we care about what Am Yisrael does, because they themselves are Torah, right? Am Yisrael's practice is Torah. The minhagim are Torah, and if you believe in those type of terms that we care so much about minhagim, then you're gonna have a very hard time switching from minhagim, because minhagim matters so much, because they are what halacha is. They are what Judaism is. What serving Kadosh Baruch Hu means is following Am Yisrael does. The third reason, which is an interesting reason, and this might be a very minimalistic reading in some ways of the third parak of Pesachim, is that we're concerned about minhagim, is that we don't want to create fights. We want to respect what the gedolim did. We want to respect what our elders did. We want to respect what our, what other members of our community do. And we're concerned about making machloksim and Kal Yisrael. And that way we follow minhagim. We follow what the stam halacha is. And there, the main concern you're going to have then in changing minhagim is going to be, practically speaking, are you going to create a fight? So maybe things like, nusach of tefillah, you're going to have a much harder time changing. But maybe something private, like what you do in your little home, especially if like your parents or your ancestors are never going to find out about it. So maybe then it's not such a big deal to change what you do with the challah practice. So we're running out of time, so I don't want to spend too much time, any more time on this. I'll leave that point here, because I want to end here and not spend too much more time. But I think that this framework of thinking about minhagim is kind of critical to how we resolve the particular issue at hand, and really a lot of issues about relating to minhagim. And that is as follows. If I were to paskin this particular shaila, I would say that I think there really is a machlokes and poskim, which will come down to a question of minhag. I think that there is clearly a lot of precedent to not heat challahs up before and to leave the challahs on the table, to leave them covered. That's what the Alter Zedim did. That's what everyone did in the shtetl. That's what the Tosfos did. It's very clear that it is our minhag. In terms of changing the minhag, while there certainly is from a halachic context, what to base yourself on, you cannot be paskin like the Gra. I'd be reticent to change the minhag, but I think that this type of minhag is a type of minhag that in some ways embodies the spirit or the nature of what Kavod Shabbos is in some ways. And then you're not just heating it up. If you're just heating it up because you stam, didn't want the challah on the table, that'd be a different issue. But you're heating up the table because you're heating up the challah because you really want to enjoy your Shabbos meal better. And I think you can make an argument then that even though true that you are changing the minhag and there's what to be cautious about, there is precedent in terms of changing minhagim and these type of issues. And I didn't quote this, but there's a lot of discussion. The Rush quotes this in, when it comes to the issue of Shehiyah on Erev Shabbos, on Shabbos, that at the end of the day, when it comes to issues of Oneg Shabbos and Kavod Shabbos, Am Yisrael's minhag is very binding. And we care very much about Oneg Shabbos. And if you think that your best Oneg Shabbos is going to be done by heating up the challahs, then while I would be reticent to suggest you should change, I think that there is room to rely on to make that minhag change and to heat up your challahs if it's going to really enhance your Shabbos.